Welcome back to TRP.
Hi, welcome back to the Rosslare podcast. It's been a busy week in Strasbourg. Let's hear about it from Mick Wallace and Claire Daly.
Hello and welcome to Strasbourg. This is I Foresee Trouble with Daly and Wallace. What a week already. It's only Wednesday, but we're just out of the plenary where there's been a lot of, what would you call it, Claire?
Chaos,
mayhem.
A view on a divided Europe, contrary to the popular call that we're all in one big happy family. Clearly not this afternoon, we weren't.
So we were voting today on the Fit for 55 package, a really important set of climate revisions in the EU, part of the goal to become climate neutral by 2050. This is the hardcore legislative stuff. Turn your phones off. And the first vote was on the European emissions trading system, which is the carbon market that's been in the place in the EU since 2005. And it's about the revision to heighten the emissions reductions ambition and other things in this file. Very technical, very big. And there was an absolute disaster in plenary because it was rejected. Surprisingly, this is a file that was led by the centre-right, but they followed a lot of the new amendments introduced by the right-wing, by the ECR group, the conservative group, supported by the ID, who are the extreme right group. And this led to then a majority rejecting the report, which is big division now in the parliament and has to go back to be renegotiated. So there's a bit of a setback there.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was absolute uproar. I mean, the voting was scheduled for 2.5 hours on a number of the files with more votes later on, which shows you the scale of the provision and the details that we're talking about. And let's remember, the EU likes to position itself as being the poster boys and girls for being the best in class at dealing with what is necessary in terms of climate change. But the reality of what happened today was that you had a text which was negotiated in committee, which was okay, and Mick, I'm sure, will deal with the details of that. That's his committee. But cute out now, the centre-right, as you call them, the EPP and Renew, decided to break ranks with what the committee had agreed to back the ultra-conservative ECR amendments to water down a lot of those provisions, basically rendering the text meaningless. And then the left, the Greens and the Social Democrats voted against the thing, which the far right did as well, and the whole thing collapsed and the centre ground were beaten into panic. But it was their fault, and they said, oh, the lefts and the Greens are siding with the far right. And going, well, sorry lads, the only reason why the left voted against the text was because ye sided with the same far right in diluting the provisions in it. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I was just laughing because I was saying, I'm waiting for someone to get up now and say, Putin is looking on now and laughing at us here. And I say, I hope he was, because, I mean, to be honest with you, this myth of a united Europe was badly exposed today. And another, I suppose, truism that was exposed is that the Polish, who've been leading the charge in militarism, are leading the charge in watering down environmental protections as well. So interesting.
It's not the only thing they're up to as well. There's a load of other stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, from what I could see, what was really happening was, I mean, look what there's been since we're here 3 years we are, and since we got here, there's been a huge push to get this environmental stuff across the line. We've had the Green Deal and the biodiversity strategy, but today was the big series of votes that were really supposed to kind of copper fasten a lot of this stuff. And what you had was you had lobbyists, vested interest, lobbying all the different groups to get what they wanted to protect their financial interests, and not wanting these environmental measures to eat into their profits too much. Now, that's a bit of a black and white version of it, right? But what you had then in the parliament today was you had the EPP, who are Fine Gael's group, and you had Renew, Fianna Fáil's group, actually going together with the right to oppose a lot of the better measures in it, to water them down. You know, yeah, we want this, but Can we make it a little bit less strong? Can we make it a little bit more acceptable to big business? Because that's really what it's... They're not saying that, but that's exactly what's happened. And it got to a stage that after all the amendments and amendments and amendments that we were facing, voting on the resolution as a whole, which we all expected to pass today. But in actual fact, when we got to that stage, it was so goddamn bad because of what EPP and Renew were doing with it in conjunction with the far right, that it wasn't worth voting for. And there was a big chaos in the Parliament, and they called for a break, more or less, to actually discuss, well, what are we going to vote on now? I think it was S&D that called for, wasn't it?
Yeah, they called for a break to actually assess what happened in the votes, because it was so complex.
Because they were going all over the place, and the S&D were copping on, and then S&D were taking the more progressive position, along with the Greens and the Left group, and they realised that, oh, hold on here now, right? The right wing, I mean, people should stop calling these fellas centre, right? Renew and EPP, as far as I'm concerned, have nothing to do with the centre. They are well to the right, right? For me, they are right wing, okay? And they like to differentiate themselves from the so-called far right, right? Now, and listen, there's no one denying the fact that we find some people in ECR nuts, right? Out to reach.
And I think everyone in ECR is nuts, in fairness.
Conservative group.
Actually,
yeah.
They're worse than ID.
Okay,
way
but,
worse.
But I'll tell you what, now, when it comes to foreign policy, right, I'm sorry now, but I'm coming across, especially in Foreign Affairs Committee, right, I'm meeting so many people in EPP and in Renew that are as bad as the ECR and the ID, right?
Well, actually, ID are actually okay.
But ID are a mixed bag, right? Yeah. You have nutters in there, and you have ones that are not quite so bad. But there's plenty of them now that leave a lot to be desired too, right? But I mean, Renew and EPP like to distance themselves from them, so they call them the far right. Right, okay, I'm not going to get into what's
but
far
today showed
what's
they voted like, the same
well so. They were on the same page for a lot today, right? And but what happened then obviously was that the right wing Renew and the right wing EPP found themselves in bed with the fellas that they think are further to the right of them, opposing the more positive measures that were in the amendments, right? And it reached a point where the resolution wasn't worth voting for. And as
we got an lecture in democracy from
I mean, listen to the grandstanding of EPP then, right?
Talk about, the left sided with, you know, the pro-Europeans in here have been, you know, sort of exposed by going with the far right. I mean, this is a nonsense. The process that we see here, because a lot of these amendments which Renew and the EPP voted for were led by the ECR, who are largely made up of climate change deniers. Yeah, these are the same people who are leading the charge to attack women's rights, who are homophobic, who are in gross violation of rule of law, flagrantly so, who pride themselves on their conservatism. And I'm a full believer that anybody has a right to believe whatever they like, but they don't have the right to impose that on other people, and they certainly don't have the right to bring in laws which are not in compliance with the fundamental charter and with the European courts and so on, which is exactly what these people... But what we are seeing now, and we see it in foreign policy, now we're seeing it in environmental policy, is these are the people who are leading the charge and dictating EU policy. It's their policy that's in place for foreign affairs now in terms of the war, and it's their policy that got into place with the environment today. Now, there'll have to be a rollback and a scurrying to save face on this, but it shows the direction in which they're going. And the irony is that we had debates, we had Ursula von der Leyen in yesterday, when the Parliament, in fairness, kicked the Commission around the place for having the audacity to agree to release the recovery fund money to Poland on the grounds that they supposedly now had corrected their rule of law stuff. Totally not true. They haven't done a thing to rectify any of the huge problems with the lack of independence of the judiciary and so on. The Polish president brought in some Mickey Mouse law to pretend to change the way in which the disciplinary chamber of the judiciary is elected. But I'd say they were laughing their heads behind their back at the commission. The commission itself is split on whether they should release the money, but they decided that they would. And in fairness, the Parliament really laid into it that this is just not on. Rule of law means accepting the primacy of international law and human rights. But they want their cake and they want to eat it. And it reveals, despite all of the nonsense, the deep-seated cracks that exist in the European Union. They may have hobbled together off the back of the war in Ukraine, but this union is riven with division, and there are elements in it who have no, and large elements in it who have no respect for rule of law or fundamental rights at
all. The sway of this ECR group, the Conservatives, it's really, they're really powerful. They're not such a numerous group, but you'll see that they're pretty heavy hitters in foreign affairs as well. There's a resolution now we're dealing with later in the week on the EU's foreign security and defence policy after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and they have another rake of amendments in there calling to ask member states to refrain from pushing Ukraine towards any agreements with Russia and to continue to provide weapons and supplies for the Ukrainian side until the aggressor is defeated. Now that's something that they're saying, and it's probably going to get a load of votes. We're going to vote on it, I think, tomorrow. But they really put a lot of work into the plenary, and you'll see that when it comes to the votes, you'll see Renew, you'll see PP, you'll see them siding with these right-wing positions. And we'll look at the votes later to see what happened on the ETS with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. But looks like they followed their groups on it. So
yeah, I look at, I mean, the for me, the Commission have been a disgrace. Before the war broke out, Poland and Bulgaria and Hungary and Slovakia were being hammered for their total disrespect for the so-called rule of law in Europe and for the rules and regulations set, as set out by the European Union. There were so many of them being ignored, and that all they were going to be, they're going to put manners on them. But now, for geopolitical reasons, they'll accept anything from them, and they have no problem moving the goalpost. And this idea of, you were talking about that amendment that you were talking about there, where literally we're going to arm Ukraine with everything we've got until we win the war. In other words, you know, I mean, but this idea that there's no room for negotiation, we cannot tolerate the idea of even sitting down at a table with the enemy. I mean, mother of God, like, I mean, whatever happened to negotiations and diplomacy? Mm. I mean, we're not saying that Russia are fighting nicely and that they're grand people. They're not. There's no one fights nice in a war, right? And what Russia is doing is criminal in Ukraine. We don't suspect for a minute either that Ukraine are fighting clean back. But I mean, war is brutal and it's ugly everywhere. And this is not the first war that was ugly and brutal. But the idea that there is no room for any kind of dialogue is absolutely shocking coming from the European Union. And to such a degree that they're prepared to abandon their own principles with this issue on Poland now, just because it suits their geopolitical agenda. Poland has been very good at accepting so many refugees. I don't know where the future, given there's over 3 million, I think, in Poland now. What's going to happen to them in the long term? I don't know. Whether the EU is actually going to pay Poland to accommodate them in the long term, I have my doubts. But we'll see. But we've reached a point where the hawks have taken over. The military dimension is paramount, and dialogue, negotiation and peace are not to be heard of. And wow, I mean, is this the European Union that we thought that we were in?
No, you're totally right. And I mean, the contradiction between them talking values on the one hand, because you're absolutely right in terms of the rule of law issue, because if you look at Poland and Hungary, both of whom have had the funds withheld from them, and rightly so. Our criticism would be that actually there's a whole load of other countries who equally should be condemned but aren't, which actually legitimises some of the moaning from Poland and Hungary that, oh, you're only picking on us because you don't like our politics. So there is an element of truth in that from their point. But the interesting thing is the one that Mick pinpointed. I mean, Poland is on the border with Ukraine and has accepted refugees and hasn't done an absolute tap in terms of changing anything on rule of law, but its money gets released. Hungary likewise is on the border with Ukraine, likewise is taking refugees, likewise hasn't done a tap with rule of law, but Hungary, unlike Poland, doesn't have a hardline attitude to Russia, which Poland are leading the charge for, you know, fighting this war till every Ukrainian is sacrificed in beating Russia, and the whole of Europe doesn't matter. They're arguing about splitting Russia and all sorts of madness. These fellas can't get enough of it. Hungary, on the other hand, have had a more nuanced approach to Russia keeping the door open. That's the only difference between the two, and Hungary's money is still frozen and Poland's isn't.
And listen, people should remember as well, right? I find it really frustrating in the European Parliament that people don't like us to put things in context. Oh, you can't go back to there, you can't go back to there. And listen, and I see it in all the groups, even our own, right? They have a problem with putting things in context. And the same as it was blasphemy to suggest that NATO's expansion eastwards destabilised the area and didn't help matters. Oh, that was whereabouts. You can't be going there. You can't be going there. Well, likewise, people should look at their history, right? And the majority of people who left Ukraine initially, especially in the early stages, or the big numbers, came from Western Ukraine, and they're mostly of Polish descent. They're actually they have a very huge, massive contact with the Polish people anyway. But it's great that Poland is accepting them and helping them, right? But there's, you know, the idea that the European Union is prepared to abandon its idea of its own rules and law for geopolitical reasons, just to hammer Russia. This is what this is all about. The idea that they're refusing to actually go to the negotiation table or even listen to anyone even talking about it. And I've been hearing criticism of Macron and Schulz because they have actually, they know, they're looking a little bit beyond next week, right? And where is all this going? Where is this all going to end? And France and Germany have been making noises to the effect that, you know what now? Maybe it's time we start talking to the Russians. Because that would make sense, right? And I mean, the idea, oh, you can't talk to the Russians, they're terrible, Putin is an honor Hitler. Listen, the Americans talk to the Taliban, right? And we should get on to Afghanistan later, right? As to what's going on there now. Yeah. And the total abandonment of the people of Afghanistan by the US and by the EU is nothing short of disgraceful. But just before we go off the subject, it is, when we heard it again today from Micheál Martin, who came to Strasbourg this week, this emphasis on militarism is really, really disappointing from the European Union.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I just want to make a point about Poland and not to seem churlish about it, but we need to examine what help Poland is actually giving, because while they've received a lot of people, they haven't actually processed and registered a lot of people, and people aren't actually staying in Poland, or they don't want to, and they're staying in conditions that are not fully suitable. Now, I'm not in any way blaming the Polish people. I think, like people all over Europe, they've responded, citizens have responded, opening their homes, opening their community centres and all that. But there's serious questions to be raised about how the Polish government is managing that, the discrimination against, you know, African students and so on. So while complimenting the Polish people, I certainly wouldn't be as plomossy as Ursula von der Leyen was, oh, they're taking in all the refugees and everything about that. But I mean, you're totally right about the splits in the West and the arrogance of these Eastern Europeans openly sort of sneering at Schulz and Macron in Germany and Draghi for arguing for peace and so on, kind of calling them wimps and this type of stuff. Just like, I don't know, like playing with people's lives as if it was a computer game or something. Like, you could see these generally old, tired out sort of former ministers in these countries sitting here in their little nice world, championing war, like for young people to go out and be slaughtered until they take back. Ukraine needs to take back every bit of its territory. So they're talking about Crimea against the wishes of the people in that area, go back into the Donbass and Luhansk. They want a never ending war. Like, these people are absolutely mental, and they're the ones leading the shots. And you're right to mention Micheál Martin, because this is the week that Micheál came to Strasbourg. And I mean, God help him now, but he was in this morning for his big address to the plenary. The session was called This Is Europe with the Taoiseach. Now, it followed last night. There was the unveiling of a statue donated by the Irish government to the Parliament for John Hume. And people might know that John Hume was an MEP for many, many years here and obviously played a pivotal role in the peace process. And to me, we didn't actually go to the ceremony because actually we feel the Irish government has debased the whole notion of Irish neutrality. That's absolutely true. But I mean, John Hume played a role in brokering a peace agreement with an oppressive neighbour, if you like, who occupied our country for years. And yet Micheál Martin, in the legacy of the Fianna Fáil party of De Valera and all that, that was strongly neutral, is just licking the boots of the European establishment in being the best little Europhile in class in terms of the war and the war effort. And it's just quite disgusting. And I actually think it's debasing John Hume's memory, because the lesson of his is that you need to broker peace, not champion war, which is what Micheál Martin was doing this morning. His speech was desperate, mind you, but that's basically what he was doing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the contrast with John Hume was striking. John Hume was one who said that the gun was not the way forward, and that peace and dialogue, no matter who you're dealing with, is the way forward. And now we have Micheál Martin, who seems closer to the East Europeans than he is to France and Germany in his attitude. He has taken such a militaristic position. I find it terrible. And it is not... For me, it doesn't represent the ordinary people of Ireland. That is not how the ordinary Irish people feel. And he was at pains to talk about, we must even impose the absolute maximum of sanctions on Russia. And, oh, of course, sanctions will hurt us all. Hurt us all. Yeah. Will they now? Will they hurt him? You know, do you know who they'll hurt, right? They're going to hurt the less well-off, apart from hurting Ukrainians who are going to continue to die needlessly because no one's trying to stop the war. It's also going to hurt people in Russia, not the government or the oligarchs, but the less well off. But the less well off right across the European Union and in Ireland are going to suffer because of these sanctions. We're introducing sanctions that are damaging us and that are not stopping the war. And Micheál Martin is fully behind that because he's playing the role of a total puppet of US imperialism. And he's fine at home because he has a mainstream media. He'll have the likes of the Irish Times and RTE backing up 100% on that, because they are wedded to US imperialism for as long as I can remember.
Yeah,
I mean, it was pathetic. Like, he came in this morning. Now, at its height, he had 67 MEPs in attendance out of 705. And obviously, the 13 Irish came out of that. We were all there. Obviously, none of us were going to miss it. But 67 out of 705. And yet they put themselves forward as the kind of, as if we're like the darlings of the European Union. But actually, and Mick's right, and it's this kind of empty vessels make the most noise. To me, he was playing to the hardline elements. He was talking about values in Europe and democracy, which is such debased language here, but playing to this idea, we need to get Ukraine in, and we need to get Ukraine in quick, you know, even playing on our history of famine in our country. Now, I thought that was really now the bottom of the barrel when he went on about hunger being weaponized and famine. Now, when we had a situation where the African Union have pleaded for an end to the sanctions because of the impact on food insecurity and people starving in Africa as a result of this war, and the likes of Micheál Martin and all of that are kind of using this and kind of making out that, you know, they've no role in this, which of course they have. So I thought he was very weak. I mean, the main things he had to say was, yes, get Ukraine into the EU really quick. Don't put up any barriers to it, which is a bit ridiculous, particularly when you consider the economic state of that country. He was saying, oh, we did too little in 2014. Now, bear in mind, this is when the coup happened and all the rest. But he said, we didn't stand up to Putin's new imperialism. Putin has been investing in extremism and disinformation in all our countries. So I was wondering who he was talking about in that. Not sure. But just ridiculous. I thought I had my suspicions. Now, he might have been a bit smart there, like, you know. But I mean, the arrogance of them. But God help him. As I said, there was only 67 in to hear him. And then, of course, later on, about 2 hours later, they were banging the bell to get everybody in for the Speaker of the Ukrainian House, who appeared in his combats. Now, he was squeezed into them, I'd say. Like, he hasn't been seeing much combat activity looking at him now. But he gave us a big lecture about touring the world, that Ukraine needs to be in the European Union.
Well, he had a lot more people listen to him.
Oh, God,
getting selfies with
out
him
the door. Oh, out the door, yeah. Selfies.
But just to pick up on a couple of points that you made on Micheál Martin's speech, right? First of all, I mean, this idea of fast tracking Ukrainian accession, they are completely ignoring the EU's own Court of Auditors report from last September. Mm. Last September? This is not 10 years ago. It's last September, right? Where they said that for more than 20 years, the EU has been supporting Ukraine in its reform agenda, tackling corruption, which is a major obstacle to a country's development and runs counter to EU values, and an integral part of that. Grand corruption and state capture are endemic in Ukraine, as well as hindering competition and growth. They also harm the democratic process. And they said, despite varied support the EU has offered Ukraine, oligarchs and vested interests continue to undermine the rule of law in Ukraine and to threaten the country's development. Now, if they think Poland and Hungary have problems, right?
And they're saying that they don't know where the money's going as well. It's going
the Court of Auditors said that there was no accountability for all the EU money. We have wasted billions of European money in Ukraine that the oligarchs and, well, I mean, Zelensky was found to have an absolute fortune at that time with the Panama Papers tucked away as well, right? I mean, these guys are cleaning out the place, right? And they're taking the EU money. They show no accountability for it, right? So the European Court of Auditors deemed Ukraine to be the most corrupt country in the whole of Europe, right? And now Micheál Martin wants to fast track their accession to the European Union. Well,
are they stopping to think
where is this going?
Like, what do they think they'll achieve with that? If you put a country that's at war at the moment, that has a load of problems, that there's also a waiting list of countries that have been waiting years to get into the EU. If you just pop the Ukraine into the EU, what's the result there?
Like, I think we hear all this talk about populism, like, because the truth is, Ukraine can't join the EU quickly. They certainly can't join when they're at war. And given the disruptive and appalling nature of their economy even before the war, it wouldn't have been practical. And yet Micheál Martin lies, basically, or plays to the gallery, because he knows that's not going to happen. It's a nonsense. And if the council support a fast-tracking, they know it's not going to happen. It's a word. Fast-tracking doesn't mean next year or the year after. It's a pledge. It's like saying Ukraine is going to join NATO, and we all know where that has ended up, because they weren't going to join, and nobody knew they couldn't have joined, but it was prodding and annoying Russia. It was causing division and escalating tensions and division rather than downplay division and arguing for unity. And it's at variance with what the likes of Macron has said. And it's pretty scary to us that the only fella who sounds halfway reasonable in the European Union now is Macron. Who in God's name would ever have thought that that would be the day? It just shows you how bad we've been. But no, Micheál Martin was talking about any country that has shared European values, which respects our values, should be allowed to join. What values is he talking about? Like, all political parties have been banned in Ukraine. Journalists had been imprisoned well before the war had started out. There's serious charges about conscientious objectors and people who want to desert the army being shot and killed, and no one doing anything about it. And this is a country that shares our values.
Well, now, Claire, now, well, I have to disagree with you a little bit there now, because really what's going on in Ukraine is you have complete state monopoly and control over the media. Now, is it that much different in Ireland?
Well, that's very true.
Given that it's over 100 years when we got our so-called independence from the Brits, and we have never had a government without either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. So we've had a right-wing government since the formation of the state, and the media in Ireland have helped to keep it that way. So we actually probably have a little bit more in common with Ukraine than we think. And what I'd like to know from the media at home, why haven't, with Micheál Martin beating the war drum and about how important it is to win this war, and that this is the first war he's ever cared about because it's one that Russia started, but he never gave a damn about the ones that America started, that Ireland as well were complicit in. Like, for example, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael supported the illegal invasion of Afghanistan, where the people are dying of hunger today. Fianna Fáil supported the illegal invasion of Iraq, where a million people plus civilians were killed. Over a million people killed, and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have never apologised for supporting it. And they supported the bombing of Libya back into the Stone Age, where the slave trade is back now. Did they ever apologise to that? But why doesn't the Irish media challenge them on the fact that they supported those three illegal wars? And where's the media to challenge the fact that they are completely silent today on Yemen, which a UN report told us before Christmas, nearly 400,000 are dead and 15.8 million have been driven into extreme poverty, and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have nothing to say about it, and they're prepared to go and have tea and buns with Saudi Arabia and the UAE, who are committing a genocide in Yemen with the help of the US and the European member states. What the hypocrisy of it. And where is the media to challenge them on their hypocrisy?
It's even worse than that, because now with the EU's new rules on energy, with its oil embargo against Russia, the plans are all to put more Saudi oil. The reason for banning the Russian oil is because of the involvement in war in Ukraine, but no one seems to care about involvement in war in Yemen. And the result is pumping more oil from Saudi Arabia, as well as all the other gas stuff that we expect later. So it's actually more complicit than doing nothing.
And US LNG.
No, and the complete double standards on that as the metric.
And
you know,
just remember as well, right, something that was revealed last year, right? There's French companies and Austrian companies and American companies stealing oil from Yemen for the last few years, not paying for it, taking it out of the country, taking advantage of the war situation, robbing oil out of the place. Mm. And no one is saying a word about it.
No, but I think you're right. Ukraine probably has a lot in common with the EU when you look at it.
That's
like
what
that.
European values
no,
are.
No, but this is it. You know, I mean, Michal tells it. It's about two incompatible views of the world. The battle of democracy versus authoritarianism. And he said EU membership was transformative for Ireland. It meant that human rights and fundamental rights were guaranteed. And then I went back up to the office, and there's a heartbreaking email from a bunch of parents of kids with severe disabilities who can't access basic services in Ireland and have to go out and protest to demand what rights are guaranteed, what transformative living standards have we got in Ireland. Like, it's a total and utter myth, you know. It's disgusting, actually. And, you know, you mentioned their complicity in the war in Afghanistan, Mick, and we had to raise it again this week because this is a horror without end. The World Food Programme announced during the week that it has had to cut back its aid programme in Afghanistan, which was bad enough anyway. They know that nearly 19 million people need help with food, they're food insecure, but they have to reduce that now. They can only serve 10 million. And what the people get is like a bag of stuff for a month, maybe a 50 kg bag of something for a whole family with a few beans and that kind of thing. That's the help that's offered. I'm not criticising them, their hearts are breaking, but they needed to raise 3.5 billion and they couldn't even get a fraction of that. Now, 3.5 billion to keep 20 million people alive. That's what they needed. And the West, America, that's given 40 billion in arms, the European Union that's pledging to spend hundreds of billions in arms, can't give 3.5 billion. I made the point that during the war, for 20 years, every single day, the US spent $300 million on the war for 20 years. The World Food Programme needs $300 million a day for 2 weeks to save 20 million people, and they can't get it. And the pictures coming out of Afghanistan are beyond horrific. It's absolutely heartbreaking, and no one is even talking about it. And Micheál Martin saying about refugees being welcome. Nobody can get out of the country. The visas have dried up. Europe is letting nobody in from Afghanistan, including the people who worked with them. And the country and is sanctioned and they've brought up their money.
And I found it at the height of hypocrisy for Micheál Martin to pretend that they have been kind and welcoming to refugees from countries where people don't have a white skin or that are not Christian, right? Because we have made life almost impossible for people coming from countries like Afghanistan and Iraq and Yemen and Syria. So few of them have been welcomed. Whereas, I mean, he's right, we have taken in about 33,000 Ukrainians, but don't start pretending that you've treated all refugees the same. But, I mean, Claire made a wonderful speech on the Afghan issue.
Thank you, President. I wonder how many people here or people who follow the media across Europe are aware of the urgency of the humanitarian catastrophe
that is accelerating in Afghanistan? Where's the focus on the announcement by the World Food Programme this week that they have to roll back on their commitment? They actually have to stop feeding the hungry so that they can concentrate on the starving. Imagine, they know 18.7 million people need food, but they can only accommodate 10 million, condemning the rest to an agonising death. And why? Because they haven't got the money. Even as the world spends billions on arms, they can't muster 3.5 billion to save lives. During the war, the US spent $300 million a day for 20 years, but they can't spend $300 a day for a fortnight to save lives. Meanwhile, the borders of Europe are closed. But this is barbarism. So the next time we talk about European values, can we think about the bodies and the lives of these people of Afghanistan? Can we call now for a lifting of the sanctions, give them back their money and release money for aid to save lives, not kill them?
We're already taking food from the hungry to feed the starving. My God, and we don't give a damn about them. And Europe helped NATO and the Americans to destroy that place for 20 years. We had Irish Defence Forces over there. They shouldn't have been near the place, right? We had no good reason to be there. They actually pretended that they were nation building, but they were actually, none of the money was going into infrastructure. It was a scam. It was a scam. The Americans spent over $2 trillion in Afghanistan, but in actual fact, it was a way of channeling American taxpayers' money to the arms industry. The military-industrial complex got over $2 trillion of the money. The Americans claimed, they boasted that they spent $2.16 trillion, and the military-industrial complex, private, got over $2 trillion of that. And the Europeans pretended, while they were propping up a rotten government in Afghanistan, who are raiding the money themselves rather than helping their own people. The place is starving now, and we don't give a damn. And Micheál Martin couldn't even mention it today. He couldn't even mention the fact that because Afghanistan was destroyed for 20 years by Western powers, that he can't even mention the fact that there's people starving and dying of hunger there.
Do you know what I find really bad as well? I mean, we've had MEPs from both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael who, as you said, Mick, were in government and complicit in the destruction of Afghanistan. We've had them hosting meetings here talking about how terrible Afghanistan is now and the need for women and girls to be educated and all of that. Now, obviously, we're in favour of that, but I think that being educated now when they're absolutely starving and dying, and the same Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael governments support sanctions on that country, which is preventing them from being fed. They have said nothing about the fact that the US has stolen the reserves of that country. Coincidentally, 7 billion, twice of what is needed for to save people from starvation. And the US have, and they've said nothing about that. But yet they have their little webinars about educating women and girls, which, as I said, we're in favour of that. But by having this on, it's normalising the situation as if it's a normal country where if it only was for the Taliban, the women and girls would be going out to school and they'd be working away in jobs. It's completely minimising the chaos and the devastation that exists in that country. It is sickening. And it's deprioritising what should be actually the real priorities there, which is shocking.
Now, the war in Ukraine has certainly added to the problems. But on top of that, the sanctions that we are responding with and that the Americans are responding with, they are adding to it even more. Right? And then on top of that, right, you have the decision by the West to almost pretend that Afghanistan doesn't exist anymore. And they're saying, oh, well, we can't do this and we can't do that because the Taliban are there. Well, hold on a minute now. Who sat down with the Taliban in Doha and negotiated their exit out of the place? The Americans did it on behalf of the Europeans as well, because NATO left at the same time. I mean, my God, what's wrong with them? I mean, whether we like it or not, and no one, we don't like the Taliban either, right? I mean, the Taliban are not nice people, and it's an absolute disgrace how they treat women, right? But I mean, they're in power there now. And the idea that we would freeze money, and there's money frozen in banks in America, in the UK, Germany and Switzerland that belongs to the Afghan state, and we're freezing it, Not giving it to them because, oh, we don't want to give it to the Taliban.
Yeah, and it was the West who created the Taliban in the first place. And now people in Afghanistan are dying and they're not allowing them rule. They're not even allowing them access to their own resources. And the consequence of that is, because even senior people in the European External Action Services have said that the Taliban is a mixed bag, that there is elements in it who do want to modernise or whatever, sort things out. They're not being allowed to rule. And the hardliners then, in the absence of them getting nothing, if you like, out of the present, are going to become more dominant, not to mind the hardline other terrorist groups that are operating in their turf that are becoming more radical, that there's more terrorist attacks going on. And meanwhile, the innocent people of Afghanistan, again, there's more people going to die of hunger and starvation than ever died in the war.
In the 20 years put together.
In the 20 years put together, the way things are going at the moment. And I just ask people, do a search on the internet, have a look at some of those pictures and try and sleep at night.
And just, Claire, you mentioned the fact as to who actually created the Taliban. And just put things in context again, because we think it's really important to put things in context so you understand where a lot of these problems came from in the first place. But in the early 80s, there was a socialist government, late 70s, early 80s, there was a socialist government in Afghanistan. And the Americans and the Saudis armed and financed the Mujahideen. In order to destabilize the area. And then, of course, you had the Russians invading the place totally illegally as well, and as culpable as what the Americans did later and the Europeans. But the Mujahideen grew stronger and stronger, and out of them came the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Mm. And many of the some of the ideas that we see in ISIS would have begun there as well, even though ISIS grew out of the American invasion of Iraq. But the Mujahideen was the start of that, and the Mujahideen would have never grown but for the support of the US and the Saudis, who are oblivious to the people in the area, didn't give a damn about the native people, but wanted to destabilize it because they didn't want it left wing, and they didn't want Russia to have an influence in the place. Just people should understand where these problems came from in the first place.
Yeah. So that's all that's happening that you don't hear about, you don't see it in the news. It's amazing that we don't have anything on the plenary agenda on this, for instance, and we haven't actually for a while. But God, we're definitely working on that in other ways here. Need to enact some serious change on the European side here in relation to Afghanistan. Mm. I think that's all we can get in for today's podcast. There's a load of other stuff happening. If we had another few hours, we could talk about all the other votes that are happening this week. But it's probably a bit too much for what we can cope with today. Thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you next time. We'll be back in Brussels. Ciao for now.
I think Claire's parting words are something that we should reiterate again. Please look at what's happening in Afghanistan and get on to your local TD and ask them to raise it and to stop the silence about people dying of hunger in Afghanistan. Mm.
As always, I would like to take this opportunity to thank Mick Wallace and Claire Daly for the use of this material. Keep on listening to TRP.